You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan. He is back at the day spa. It had been a while since he had been there, so he had to go back there just to keep his membership miles up. I am replacing him for today's show with his internet dad, Pete Zayas of Laker Film Room and Form Bloom Gold. Pete, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Let's be sure to talk copious amounts of crap about Harrison today.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's the MO around here. Even when he's around, let alone when he isn't. So
That's true. This is just like an added layer of it. So
I'd say that he's ducking you, but I don't think he's physically capable of ducking with that neck of his.
You know, he said you know, he said the same thing about you on the last one, and I agreed with him because he was present company and you were gone. So, you know, we talk crap about you. So that's just kind of how the world works. So.
I just had to get that. The neck digs have to come.
That was very solid, man. That was right in the flow. Really, really good. Right in the like the flow of the offense. You know,
it was good stuff. It was not a KCP joke. We'll say that. today's show is going to be a fun one. It's an off day, so I get to wander around Lakers coverage and sports coverage, and those are my favorite kind of days. So we're going to talk about Lonzo and who misses him the most now that he's been out for, I think it looks like he's going to be out for at least another game, probably a few on this road trip. So we're going to talk about that, and then after that we're going to talk about, well, I already forgot what we're going to talk about. How about that?
Oh, it's going to be Paul George and DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, Paul George or Boogie in the event that the Lakers can only sign one of them. Which guy we would prefer that the Lakers go with? And then finally, with news that Vince McMahon has succeeded in bringing back the XFL, I thought it would be fun because Pete and I are both basketball nerds. If we were given our own league to have our own rules, what major changes we would make to the way basketball is played in the NBA. So that'll be, I'm really looking forward to that last one. I might actually just kind of like skim through this stuff so that we can get to spend ample time on that last topic. So let's go ahead and get to it, right?
I'm all in on that. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. As always, guys, make sure you guys are following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation when Harrison writes, Lakers Nation where I, or Lakers Outsiders where I write. Pete, I'll just ask a question. Who misses Lonzo the most?
It's Brandon Ingram, and it's not even close.
Yeah.
he's a guy that, you know, he's more of a secondary ball handler and off-ball player than he is the primary, you know, put the ball in his hands type of guy. If you look at his, you know, points per possession in ISO situations or as a pick-and-roll ball handler, which are the primary half-court on-ball situations, they're very low. You know, he's in the 20s and 30 percentiles of those type of things. And if you look at him on the off-ball stuff, even the spot-up shooting, he's, you know, high 40s to all the way to, you know, low 70s, mid-70s in the off-ball stuff. The one thing that he does well on the ball is post-up. And, you know, with Lonzo out of the lineup, they look to Brandon because KCP, as much as I like the decisions that he makes out of like pick and roll type situations, he doesn't have the ball handling ability to kind of exploit everything you can do out of a pick and roll. So KCP is more of an off ball player. Josh Hart is an off ball player. Tyler Ennis is, you know, just ineffectual. And so
he is a never ball player.
Yeah, man. He's just like,
he was actually the name I was, because I knew you were going to go with Ingram because that's kind of how I felt as well. But I was going to say Tyler Ennis because with Lonzo out, he has to play a bunch and people realize, oh yeah, that's right. You're still Tyler Ennis.
I think we're the ones who miss Lonzo ball most when Tyler Ennis has to play.
I can't disagree there.
I, Yeah. So yeah, man, it's Brandon, man, and I think, you know, we saw a nice, not just a nice, a really, really good like 4-game stretch from Brandon that was really efficient. He's also dealing with an ankle injury within this, but I don't want to minimize that, but the ankle injury is not what's causing like contested mid-range jumpers with 15 seconds left on the shot clock, and just a greater degree of on-ball scenarios in that little 4-game stretch that Brandon was just killing it. He had like tripled his cut possessions and spot up attempts went up, mm-hmm. You know, like that's the dude he is. And that's, I actually asked Luke about this today about, you know, because half of Brandon Ingram's attempts right now are from mid-range, and his shots around the rim are up from last year, but his three-point attempts are way down. So I asked him, you know, like, why, like, what's your thought process as to why we've seen an increase on that but a decrease in the three-point attempts? And Luke's answer was kind of built around the idea that everything's built off of Ingram driving to the basket. And on those situations where he's trying to drive to the basket, if that's not available, those mid-range pull-ups are what's going to be available. So I can see the thought process. I don't entirely agree with Luke on that. But to me, that's still developing him as an on-ball player when, in my eyes, you know, he could be a very good off-ball player. And that isn't an insult. Like, Kuzma's an off-ball player, and he's really fantastic at that. So I just have a disagreement with how the Lakers are developing Ingram in terms of, like, the role they see him in.
I actually have my thoughts on Ingram as well here, because people don't really think of Lonzo Ball and spacing and having gravity in that respect, but I actually think he does in an odd way, and I'm going to explain that here in a second. So when people think of Lonzo Ball and shooting, right, it immediately goes to, well, he has that funky shot, it's an up and down, he's kind of a streaky shooter, and when people think spacing, they think and gravity. The first thing people think of is a Steph type player, and then the second thing people think of is like a DeAndre Jordan type player, where his roles have their own gravity. But I actually think Lonzo's ability to make quick decisions leads to a different type of gravity and a different type of spacing, where defenses are just a little more off balance when Lonzo is out there compared to Ennis or Caruso or any other league guard. And what that leads to is when Ingram is catching the ball, even if it isn't on a cut, which I completely agree, he looked really good cutting and he has nice instincts in that respect of the game. But when he catches the ball nowadays, the defense is 100% stationary. Everybody, his defender especially, is squared up to him and ready to slide either way. Whereas with Lonzo, because Lonzo is so good at, before he gets the ball, taking an image of the court and then making the right pass almost 9 times out of 10, what it leads to is Ingram catches the ball and his defender isn't 100% balanced, isn't squared, is closing out, and that enables Ingram to go either way. Would you agree with the theory there?
Man, you are 100% right on that, in that Ingram is really good at attacking a compromised defense, which is what you're describing, in that when he, you know, is at the top of the key and everybody's got their eyeballs on him, there are some situations where he can be effective, and that's usually when he's able to get all the way to the basket, but that's highly dependent upon how the defense is covering him. Mm-hmm. And if they are defending him with the idea in mind that we're not going to let you get all the way to the basket and you can do anything else, and that's something that defenses can take one thing away. It's harder to take two things away, and it's impossible to take three, meaning that the three in, like, say, a high ball screen scenario, the three options are drive all the way to the basket and get a layup for yourself or kick it out to somebody else. Brandon's already really good at that. The second option is, you know, hey, a guy goes under the screen or something, pull up behind the arc and pop that three-pointer. The third option is, you know, it's a pick and roll and the guard fights over the screen or Brandon's defender fights over the screen and the big hangs back in the paint. They're basically surrendering that mid-range jumper. And Brandon's okay at that for mid-range jumpers, but the reason that we've seen those shots go out of style is that, you know, the average player in the NBA hits about 39% of those. It's 38 or 39% mm-hmm. is what that usually is. And since it's only worth 2 points, that's a really bad possession, right? You're talking about 0.78 to 0.8 points per possession when the average half court possession is around 0.95, 0.96 these days. So defenses are perfectly willing to let you shoot those pull-ups because they know that in the long run it's a winning formula to do that. Now, Brandon's okay at hitting those, but again, the math doesn't work. And so the ability just to be able to knock down that three rather than that pull-up is going to be, you know, going to be really important for him, but he's not at that point. And so his ability to attack a closeout or attack those compromised defensive situations that you're describing, he's much better at that than he is when everybody's set and has all eyes on him.
Yeah, it's a night and day kind of thing. And I think Caruso has stepped in and played pretty well. Obviously the Lakers have won now three in a row, so that has something to do with it as well. But it just goes to show, like, people kind of roll their eyes at the hashtag Lonzo effect, right? But this is where it really shows up in getting defenses to those compromised situations. So something to keep an eye on. Hopefully Lonzo gets back sooner rather than later. It looks like he's at least going to miss the Chicago game, and we'll see how deep into the road trip that they get before he comes back. Let's go ahead and move on, though. We're at that point in the season where you have trade rumors swirling around, NBA players are apparently taking it upon themselves to take shots at each other whenever possible. This is kind of sort of my favorite time of the year because the most can possibly change and the most chaos can pop up. But what we're also starting to see is this kind of dynamic or comparison between Paul George and Boogie Cousins, two upcoming free agents, and the sectors are kind of starting to plant their flags on one side or the other. So if you had to choose one, which way would you go? Would you rather have Paul George sign, and let's say the money and the length of the contract is the same, would you rather sign Paul George or DeMarcus Cousins?
So I'd be happy to have either of them, but if given a choice between the two, I'm very much in the Paul George camp. I think it's difficult. I'm having a hard time thinking of who are the like really high usage bigs in the NBA that are primary players on really good teams. Mm-hmm. I think the closest that you can get right now is Karl-Anthony Towns on Minnesota. And to be frank, I think that like we've seen what a difference Jimmy Butler has made and his return, or not his return, but his rejoining with Tom Thibodeau. And like Butler's the guy that stirs the drink on that. Now, that doesn't mean that the Lakers need talent. And that's one thing that I think that Laker fans, I think we've wanted to skip from like 26 wins to 56 wins without crossing through like 36 wins and 46 wins along the way. And we can be a little bit like, oh no, I don't want that guy because he's not perfect. And neither Paul George nor DeMarcus Cousins are. And while I'd greatly prefer Paul George, like if you can get a talent like DeMarcus Cousins on the team, you'd do it.
Yeah.
And because I mean, what's the worst case scenario is like to me a contract
Kings, you become King South. That's worst case, I would say.
I mean, that's worst case scenario, but I think the Lakers have too much young talent for mm-hmm. that to happen.
I agree.
And for me, a guy doesn't become a bad contract until you can't move him. Now, is DeMarcus Cousins like a top 5 or even 10 guy that I would give a max contract to? No. But if you sign DeMarcus Cousins and, you know, things are going okay, but maybe not great, and he's 29 years old, can you trade him on a max contract? I think you probably can. And to me, like, it becomes a problem when it gets into Dang or Mozgov type territory where it's like, yeah, he's overpaid and we can't move him. I think DeMarcus Cousins is a guy that even if you were like, yeah, we want to move on from this guy, you could get out of his contract and free up that money, no problem. So, yeah, I'd rather have George, but DeMarcus Cousins I'd be happy with.
Yeah, I think – so for me, it comes down to – I've always argued, and I've said it a few times on the podcast, is it comes down to me, the small forward is the most important position in the NBA. They take the most of the most efficient shots, whether it's spot-up three-pointers, corner three-pointers, or dunks. A good small forward can slide up or down for possessions to guard guys defensively. And I'm concerned with DeMarcus Cousins' ability to handle the pick and roll. And look, like I would agree 100% that if the Lakers can sign DeMarcus Cousins, I'm not going to say, woe is me, the Lakers got DeMarcus Cousins. That's way far from what my reaction would be. But in terms of guys who I think can most easily fit, and guys who fit best on this roster too, because if you get DeMarcus Cousins, I'm concerned about where Julius Randle fits into all of that, right? Because he's best as a center. DeMarcus Cousins would be playing center. And I don't know. I mean, maybe Julius Randle figures it out and develops the skill set to be able to play alongside DeMarcus. But for right now, if you're looking at guys who can just slide into a position and the Lakers can maintain momentum that they build over the extent of the remainder of the season, I think it's Paul George, and it's probably pretty easy.
Yeah, and I'm curious though. Let's explore the whole like Randle thing, because mm-hmm. that's a really good point. What have you thought of him these last, gosh, I don't know how many games it's been. I feel like it's been 8 to 10 games or so where he has been starting at the four next to Lopez.
It's up and down, which is kind of what Randle is always going to be, I think, for or at least for the next couple of years until he really hits his prime stride. But I like what he can do from a standpoint of if Lopez is tasked with just blocking everybody out and Randle is tasked with go and get the ball and then get the ball up the court, then cool. It's too bad that over the last, you know, five or so games, we haven't seen Lonzo out there with those guys as well. I thought when we were seeing some of the starting lineup that everybody kind of hoped to see, which was Lonzo, KCP, Ingram, Randle, and Lopez, I thought we saw some good and some bad. But the concern or the issue that I think Randle runs into anytime he plays the four is he's almost too hyperactive. He's too up and down. So either he says, okay, I'm going to try to play into my spot, and he becomes a little too passive, or he says, I'm going to be this power forward dynamo and go out and do everything. And he kind of runs into problems in that respect. What have you seen there?
I've been generally happy with Julius mm-hmm. at the starting four and just overall throughout the season. He's been a guy that, you know, last year I was a lot more down on than I've been this year. But for me, like, I'll live with the kind of Tasmanian devil Julius, where he's out of control mm-hmm. because you can get, like, there's few guys that can do the good stuff that he can do. And, like, there was a stretch against Boston the other day where he really took it to Al Horford, who's a really good defender, really smart, you know. But there was like a 5-minute stretch where Julius, you know, really imposed his will on the game, and the Lakers got it tied back up, and they, you know, it went from an 8-point deficit at halftime to, and it was mostly on the strength of Julius's will.
The Knicks game as well. He was just Porzingis had nothing to do with him.
Yeah, man, he was Porzingis with two O's, man. he was, and to me, like, and maybe this is I'm kind of a glass half full kind of guy in general. Like, don't tell me what a guy can't do. Like, tell me what he can do, mm-hmm. and then we can work with that. And that's kind of how I feel about Julius. Is that the good of him? I'm willing to live with some of the bad and operate under the presumption, even though it might not be maybe it's a little bit foolish. I think that a guy like that, like, will do less dumb stuff the older that he gets.
Yep.
And maybe that's foolish, but if I can trade that for the good stuff that he does do, I would like that. The one thing I will say though is that he's only playing 23.3 minutes per game right now, and if they want to re-sign him to a $10 million plus deal, which is likely what it's going to take to retain him, like, I don't want to sign a guy for that much if he's only playing half of the game, mm-hmm. you know? And that's going to mean, like, with Luke, like, does that mean Luke then sees him as a 28 to 30 minute per game guy or more than that? Because below that, you just get into, like, yeah, maybe Julius is good, but if he's just playing half of a game, you know, why do you spend that much money in that type of guy?
Yeah, I think that's fair, and that's definitely a concern. I think a lot of Randall's minute total this year was the thinking that he might not figure into the Lakers' eventual the Lakers' future plans. So he was playing a little bit less than people would hope, right? And Nance was getting a larger look because he is under contract next year. I think another question to ask here too regarding Randall is, where do you think he figures into? Where does he? Which position is he best at for the remainder of his career, right? If you think that he can be good as a power forward, then cool. Then he works great. Like if you think that he is best, if he figures everything out and he starts figuring out, you know, understanding what type of control it takes to play the four versus a Tasmanian Randall five, then okay, then it makes a ton of sense, and that front court with Boogie and Randall becomes a really fun one, right? But if you think that he is probably best suited as that Tasmanian Randall 5, then you get into some complications here, because you're also wondering about it's fair to wonder how long a player can play with that type of energy over the extent of a 10-year career.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. To me, though, he is that five. Mm-hmm. That is his natural position. If I had, you know, my druthers, the way that Golden State's kind of had it set up for the last few years is they've got a big body kind of banger five type guy that starts and plays the first shift of the first quarter and the first shift of the third. And the rest of the game is kind of a small ball five type of guy. To me, the way that Draymond's used, I think that the Draymond Julius comparison is maybe a little bit overdone, but in terms of his positional usage, I think we could see something similar where Julius is the starting four and the closing five type of guy. Mm-hmm. But then that means not signing a guy like DeMarcus Cousins, right? Yeah. It means signing a guy like Zaza Pachulia to mid-level exception or less than that to, you know, not invest too much money in a guy like that. And so for me, you were talking about Paul George earlier of being at a really important position, like a two-way wing that can defend guys and switch up or down. Like, those are gold in the NBA. And you see a lot more of those type of guys being really important parts of really good teams. And, you know, that's why I'd rather invest in Julius and a wing like Paul George than put all that money into a guy like DeMarcus Cousins, even though if it worst comes to worst, yeah, you got to sign a talent like that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we're going to get to the topic that you and I were both really looking forward to. We're going to I like thinking outside the box. I think you're capable of doing it too. You and I are both basketball nerds, so for those of you who are looking forward to a Talk Nerdy to Me segment, then this would be it. We'll both make, I'll say, two rule changes or style of play changes to the current basketball and to the NBA that we have right now. Where would you start with your NBA version of the XFL?
All right, so I was thinking about this earlier. I feel like, so your team has to have at least one journalist on the court at all times. Like, I want to see, like, Harrison. So World Wide Wob, Rob Perez, tweeted this yesterday. I didn't know this, but the Atlanta Hawks do this thing where they will, you know how, like, between quarters there's entertainment and halftime entertainment and things like that. They do this thing where they pull someone out of the crowd to defend this dude, and I don't remember his name, but this dude on the And One tour. And oh, so, no. Like, it's just like regular Joe's just getting crossed up. And like, so I would love to see, like, yeah, a journal. And this was something we were talking. I don't think you were in the room when we were at Spectrum a couple weeks ago when Stacey Mitch was talking about, or were you, when she was talking about doing, like, a journalist game?
Yep.
Like a pickup game? Yeah, you were. That's right. That's right. Uh-huh. Like, I would love something like that where, like, the people that are always talking crap about these NBA players, of which you and I are part of that, of course.
Tyler Ennis, like, Tyler Ennis would get to live tweet this.
Right, yeah, like, I would pay so much money to see Tyler Ennis, like, cross you up, Anthony. God, that would be the best thing. So, yeah. So things like that, man, that would be wonderful. How about you?
Oh, man, that's a good one. I really like that one, too, because the other thing is I feel like the type of journalist who will most easily question a player's energy or effort or say the most disrespectful stuff about the player is also the guy who probably can't step out there and play. Like, I feel like
there's like an inverse relationship, between the two for sure.
Because the people who have played know how good these guys are. Right, like the people who have played know that if Tyler Ennis stepped into your local YMCA, he would just dominate. It would not be fair for anybody involved, right? So
I played a pickup game once with John Amici, who was a big at Penn State. He played for Phoenix for a few years. He was like one of those 12th man type of guys.
The Lakers were thinking about signing him during the three-peat era.
Yeah, and so he was, you know, kind of he's like about 6'9", 6'10". And I played this pickup game with him. He played, so he didn't take any shots around the basket. I think it was something that he was like working on something because he could have totally. And these were, and now mind you, I was like the guy on the court that belonged the least. There were a couple like D1 like college players or, you know, that weren't D1 at the time, but played D1 ball at some point. And oh my God, he made every damn shot.
It's insane.
And like none of them were layups around the basket. So yeah, there's absolutely like a lack of appreciation for how good these guys are. I was talking to a high school kid the other day that was like, I'm going to make it to at least the G League. Like mm-hmm. That should be no problem. I'm like, bro, get yourself like – get to a D2 college school first and then we'll talk. You know, like, yeah, people don't realize how good these dudes are.
Yeah, it was nice when I was there at Cal State Fullerton. They had just opened up the rec center, and I would get to play against guys that were on the team. And then one time, the guy who just got released by Houston, Bobby
Brown.
Bobby Brown stepped in, and I had to guard Bobby Brown. And I don't know if you've heard the story, but when I was in high school, I played against Ty Lawson in like an AAU kind of thing. And well, it was my college, it was my high school team, and then we were playing in this huge tournament out there in San Diego. It was like their big UCSD tournament, and Ty Lawson's AAU team went up against my high school team, and I don't think it's fair. Like, I don't think people should be allowed to move as fast as he did. It was just insane.
Yeah, no, they're wild, man. So what's your XFL? Oh.
I would make the court bigger. That's where I would start.
That should be an NBA rule, though. That's just like common sense, yeah. Right there. Like, that's my least favorite turnover in the NBA is when a guy steps back to push off and steps out of bounds.
Well, I think the other thing too is like the dimensions of the NBA court in and of themselves are arbitrary, right? They just decided one day that the court is going to be X long and X wide, and then somehow it has become almost a constitutional Newtonian law, right? So the other thing too with court size is not just the turnover that you're talking about, but I think that the human body has evolved to a place now where it's too big, it's too fast, it's too strong for this arbitrary size of the NBA court. So you see a lot of injuries that I think widening and expanding the court would actually cut down on some of these injuries where guys are just running into each other because there isn't anywhere else to really go. I think you could do this across all the sports, really, football especially.
Yeah, no, man, I'm right there with you. And to me, that's not even like an XFL, an ex-NBA type thing. Like, that should just be an NBA type thing because it just makes too much sense to not do it.
Yeah. I'll let you take the next rule.
Gosh, so in the XFL you had, you know, like no fair catches and things like that. Now I've been racking my brain trying to think of the like NBA equivalent. I think like no jump balls, like having guys just like wrestle like prison rules, you know, like just go at it. I may have cursed right there. Sorry, Harrison.
No,
you're gonna have to like edit this, but yeah, like just like go at it and just like wrestle each other until one of them comes up with the ball. I do that in my high school practices sometimes when I thought that we were being hold soft. On, I'm folding my arms. Well, yeah, I folded my arms when we were being soft, and not manning up enough. I just let them go at it, and you know, sometimes fights would break out, and I'd have to break that up. But yeah, that was that'd be my next rule: is no jump balls. You guys have to wrestle until one of you gets the ball.
It's funny because you mentioned the high school stuff. One of the drills, my first high school coach, he actually got fired my sophomore year, but the coach for my freshman and sophomore year was a football guy. He just happened to be a basketball coach. He played football at the University of Hawaii, and one of his favorite drills was, all right, we have one ball. We have all of you guys are on the court at the same time. There are no fouls, no travels, no nothing. It is literally just, I forget, what was it called? I think it was just called mercy ball. Murder ball. And it was insane. And at least one time per drill, somebody would walk away having thrown a punch or having been hit by a punch. And that would be, seeing that with NBA guys with the size that they are would legitimately scare me for some of the people sitting courtside. That'd be insane.
Yeah, no, for sure. That would be fun to watch, though. I think that carries on the Vince McMahon spirit for sure.
My rule change follows along those lines. And it's one that I, again, 100% stand behind. Would not even just like fictional rule changes. I want to get rid of the charge. I'm so sick of the charge. It's so it requires very little skill. I hate it with all my people get hurt. Kids get hurt trying to learn how to take charges. It just, to me, you're a basketball coach, so you probably disagree with me here, but I can't stand that call. I hate it more than anything else when somebody is on a fast break and they throw a pass and the guy just steps in front of the ball handler and just gets knocked over and that's somehow rewarded by a turnover. I can't stand that rule. And yeah, it would lead to more people getting dunked on, which is always fun.
That is always fun, yes. The one where a guy passes it and then his momentum runs a guy over, I agree with that. That should be changed. But I do think that I do like the charge rule overall, although I know you have your personal reasons for why you don't like the charge rule. But I could see that. I could see that. Yeah, like it would encourage bigs to like and that's the other thing. That's, you know, some of my old man coming out is a guy who's like 7'1", like rotating over and like stepping in to take the charge. Like, come on, man, like block the damn shot, you know, like exactly. Go up and challenge that. So, yeah, I could get behind that for the most part. Not entirely, but for the most part.
I think also, like, I'll have more of a fictional one here, and then I'll let you wrap up with your last one if you have another one. But I want a trampoline under the basket. Like, it would be so much fun to see some version of slam ball, not to the same extent, where they had, like, I think they had three different trampolines. That and people would take like multiple jumps on the thing to get up in the air. I wouldn't go that far, but if you could just like hit a button and then all of a sudden somebody could just a trampoline kind of pops up out of the bottom of the floor and people could get up where their feet are higher than the rim, full on NBA Jam style, would just be astronomically dangerous, but so much fun.
Yeah, Anthony, you know, on one hand, you're like, chargers are dangerous. And then you're like, let's tear some ACLs. Like screw your Achilles. Like, let's get trampolines out there. Like, let's get a randomly soft surface that has give all around hardwood. You know, just pop out of nowhere. What could go wrong? Yeah.
Who said I had to be consistent with these?
That's right. It's a jam show, right? Like, who cares, right? my last one would be, you know, it's kind of cliche, but like a 10-point shot or something,
yeah,
past half court or something like that, that, you know, could make end game scenarios a little more, you know, a little more intriguing, even if it's not, you know, a 2 or 3 point game.
It would be, I'm 100% on board with like an 8-point shot. So if you were to do this dimensions wise, a 10-point shot would be one step in from the baseline, I think, right? And then like a 4-point shot would be maybe 3 feet behind the regular, 5 feet behind the regular 3-point line, and then you just kind of gradually go up that way. I just want, because you and I both know you've spent time in NBA gyms and I've been able to watch these guys. Everybody listening to this, I would imagine, has at one point or another gone to an NBA game. And these guys are so damn big. They are so damn skilled. And if they were given an incentive to work on a half court shot, could you imagine? Like, Steph would be legitimately dangerous from back there. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that, you know, we can talk about it, you know, perverting the game and whatnot, but that's the same thing that people were saying in the late 70s when they were talking about whether or not they should add a three-point line. And it would likely be similar in that it was something that even when it was introduced, it was rarely used. But then progressively people started realizing, you know, how they could do that. And I would love for a guy that can hit 35, 40-foot shots to be rewarded for that in an extra sense than just hitting a 24 footer.
Yeah. I mean, it's right now there's a novelty to seeing Steph pull from the places that he pulls from, but if it becomes strategic, if that becomes an advantage that you can take advantage of, like, that would be insane. It would be so much fun. And like the big knock on the NBA right now is that, or one of the big knocks, especially if you listen to former players, is that there isn't the clash of styles, because we have realized dimensionally what the most valuable shots in the game are, and now all these guys are kind of playing copycat in finding different ways of getting to those spots on the floor. If you introduce completely new point systems, we have to rethink that, and then now you get that clash of styles potentially that people say that the NBA lacks right now. I'm all for it.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, we're talking kind of this ex-NBA type of scenario. For me, the thing that I would like to see in conjunction with your first one of widening the court and lengthening the court is I'd like to see the three-point line moved back. It would be cool to have a four-point shot or something like that, but to me, they need to get to the point where, like, a three-point shot and a mid-range shot are like close enough to each other to where you can conceivably build around one or the other depending upon the personnel that you have on your roster and construct a championship team. One of the things that I noticed from watching the playoffs last year, you know, as it got to the conference finals or even the conference semifinals, it was like all these teams pretty much play the same way in terms of the types of shots that they're looking to achieve. And the way the NBA is now is it's shots at the rim, free throws, and three-pointers. And it would be really neat to get the post game reintroduced into the game or the mid-range game reintroduced. But the reason that they're not there is because they don't yield enough points per possession to be viable. And if you can move the rules around a little bit to where, like, different teams stylistically can actually contend for championships, I think you'd have a much more interesting league.
I wonder, like, another, I guess, version of this, iteration of these minor rule changes that were, I say minor, I just asked to have a trampoline on an NBA court. But one of these, an iteration of what we're talking about with moving the lines is, why not have home field, like, baseball's route, right? Where teams can decide the dimensions of their court, where the three-point line is put. If a team decides, hey, if let's say the Lakers were playing against Houston for a series, and they said, all right, we're going to screw with their strategy, and we are going to take away, you know how the three-point line goes straight down into the court? We're just going to take that away, and it's going to be a full-on arc all the way down to the baseline. It's going to be really hard to find a way to shoot that corner three-pointer. That would be a lot of fun. I'd be all for that.
Yeah, that could be interesting. I don't know. That my like first instinct is to be like, everything should be in regulation. But you're right. They don't do that in baseball. That's I would be more for that maybe in an ex-NBA environment than an NBA environment. But yeah, that's an interesting thought.
Open air stadiums. Like
that. Yeah. That was the other thing that I thought of was like, I was talking to someone yesterday. One of the other guys who covers the Lakers grew up in the Antelope Valley, which I did. I grew up in Little Rock, and there was a park, Dominic Massari Park, where I'd play a lot of my ball. And the AV is like notorious for its wind, right? Where like year round, it's like 20 to 30 mile an hour winds. And we were talking about how you have to like adjust your game for, you know, like when it's windy outside. And, you know, if you're a shooter, you got to kind of figure that out. Yeah, that would be another thing, you know, like outdoor stadiums and the things that go along with that that could add a extra dimension to that.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have the – I grew up out here, so we didn't have the crazy winds. Although I did grow up – I went to school at an elementary school that was pretty unprotected. So, like, when the Santa Anas would whip through here, you would have those crazy winds where you had to aim elsewhere in order to make a jumper.
Yes, yes.
what we did grow up with, or I'm sure a lot of people listening grew up with, were the double rims, where you had the...
Oh, God, it's the worst. I hate those.
Oh, my gosh, they were terrible. And if you basically, if you didn't bank or swish a jumper, it just wasn't going in, right? It made me a better shooter and all that stuff, but it was just, you'd play a game of 21 that lasted like 2 hours because you couldn't score. This was a lot of fun. So to put a bow on... To wrap everything up, to summarize what our league would look like, we'd have bigger courts, some in open air spaces, some dimensions of the court would be different based on the design of the home team. There's a trampoline involved, no jump balls, so people would just full on fight on the court, and charges would be abolished. I would watch this league. I would.
And Harrison has to play in it.
Oh yeah,
against NBA caliber athletes.
And, yeah, and journalists have to. Would you do that? Would you make that like an at all times kind of thing, or would you just say a journalist has to play 5 minutes in both halves kind of thing?
So I want one journalist on the court at any given time.
Oh my gosh.
Like I don't think you can have two, because I don't want, like, you know, Harrison guarding, I don't know, Matt Moore or somebody like that. You know, like you want it to be unfair in that sort of context. So yeah, I think you'd have to alternate, like every 5 minutes you'd have to put your journalist in the game against, you know, amongst nine other, you know, high caliber athletes.
It'd be great if the NBA teams, if they abided by this rule, or in our ex-NBA, that teams just start paying for guys to go to college and get a journalism degree so that they could be on the court.
have your ringer in there. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, man, this was a blast. I thoroughly enjoyed this last bit of the conversation. This was a lot of fun. It was informative in the beginning. Thanks for joining me, man. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, it's always fun, man. Thank you for having me.
All right, guys, we will be, what's today, Thursday? I don't know if we have a show tomorrow. If we have a show tomorrow, we have a show tomorrow. Otherwise, Harrison, enjoy the day spa. Pete, enjoy the rest of your day. And we'll talk to everybody again next time we talk to everybody.